Gary. Good evening, everybody. Wow, almost started the show on time. It's Wednesday, August 17th, 2022. It's 8.03 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time here. This is the Fakeologist Show. This is the Fakeologist. And I'm coming to you from the North Shore of Lake Ontarible in Toronto, Ontarible, Canada. And this is a variety show where we talk about just about anything I want to talk about. But the difference between a regular talk show and my talk show is I'm a fakeologist. And I know that almost every single story in the media is fake or manufactured to psychologically change your perception of reality. So every single story, I never take at face value. I actually auto-hoax it, which means every story is fake until proven real. That's what's allowed me to survive this insanity of the coronavirus hoax reset psyop. This is a psychological operation. And I think by now, you guys out there that aren't fakeologists that somehow stumbled upon this podcast, you've had 2.5 years to scratch every piece of skin off your head to figure out that there is something wrong. Everyone here figured it out on the day of. We were waiting for this day. We knew it would be big. It would be big. We had no idea what it was going to be. But I think 2.5 years is quite enough. I think you guys should have figured it out by now. Now, I have two guests on my show, one, John Manley, who's my guest. So let me just say hi, John Manley. Hello, John.
Hello, Professor.
Thank you. Thank you. I like that name. You figured it out because you wrote a book, Much Ado About Corona. And I think you wrote a book in a fiction form because, well, why did you make it fiction? I think we discussed it, but let's...
Well, I'd say one of the reasons is I think when you're dealing with something as abstract as a mass psyop like this, I think sometimes the only way you can get the truth across is with an overarching story, mm-hmm. which is exactly what they've been doing to brainwash everybody. Anyways, it wasn't with facts, it was with story.
Myths, yes, for sure. And actually, did we talk about Jim Fetzer, how he wrote a book about Sandy Hoax?
Yeah, that was a good move of his.
And that was an auto hoaxer, Tim Osman from IPS, a show I listen to every day. I highly recommend everyone put it on their podcast list. He's almost every day now. He does a big show. And he suggested to Jim, why don't you make it fiction? Then they can't ban it because it's fiction. I know. So it was a great idea.
If Alex Jones had done that, he'd be a few million dollars richer right now.
Actually, Alex Jones is, I heard, making a ton of money. This publicity is helping.
Okay, right, then I need to get sued. I've been trying to get sued for 2.5 years and nothing's happened. Have you been sued yet?
No, what for? I only tell the truth. You can't be sued. You can't be sued for the truth. Hey, we have another guest. We have a guest of a guest, which is something that's happened twice in the last week. It's funny. I offer a guest, and I said, do you have a guest? And the guest brings a guest. So can you introduce your guest?
Oh, it's Jordan Henderson, the artist behind both the cover to my novel, but some of the creepiest paintings you've ever seen about COVID and some of the most beautiful.
That's a pretty good introduction. Thank you for that, John. It's great to be on the show.
Well, fantastic. I just put all your paintings that are on a screen of yours on the screen. So anyone who is watching the video of this broadcast, this is an audio and a video broadcast, can look at your screen now and see some wonderful pictures. And it's funny because we were also talking, Jordan, with Sanity for Sweden, who's one of Sweden's number one YouTubers. And he graced me with his presence and he actually injected steroids into my statistics. It's unbelievable. This guy is a huge audience. All of a sudden, my server gets... and he's an artist, too. And modern art came up where we were discussing modern art. Do you have an opinion on modern art, and how would you describe your art?
Okay, that's a pretty broad question, isn't it? Let me think.
Okay.
So modern art, usually when people say modern art, right, they're referring to non-representational art.
Yes.
Abstract art.
You got it. Right. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
It's confusing because there's kind of some fairy tales within the mainstream art world about what's happened with art, right? And one of the main fairy tales is this evolution of representational art into non-representational art, right? So if you get any mainstream art book, you'll see something like a series of art movements, right? It'll go through like Baroque art, right? And then it'll go into something like the pre-Raphaelites and whatever. And then it gives you this idea that representational art evolves into non-representational art. And all of a sudden you end up with Rothko and some of the other names are failing me right now, but you know, the guy throwing his paint at the canvas and so forth. And the idea is that the one is representational arts evolving into non-representational art.
Yeah. Can you see my screen right now?
Yes. Now I can see your screen. Yes.
It's funny because Paul Joseph Watson, who has 1.9 million subscribers on YouTube, did a piece on this. And just the day after we discussed it, where he's checking in on modern art. So here we have representational art here, and then this is a modern art display. Oh, sorry, carry on.
What is it? What is it? Just bricks or
cardboard boxes? Maybe Amazon boxes.
A stack of cardboard boxes.
Yes, that's modern art.
Is that a pole in the middle? Or is
that's the pole museum holding up the ceiling of the museum.
So it has nothing to do with the
No.
So it's just a pile of boxes.
Yeah. And oh, here's another piece of modern art. Piles of garbage bags. Or no, maybe that's them setting it up. Yeah, that's them setting it up. Yeah. So anyway, that's...
Oh, boy.
Sorry to interrupt your flow, Jordan. I just wanted to see...
Oh, no, you're fine. That's totally worth bringing up. That actually helps out. So the main thing is just, to me, the idea of non-representational art evolving into abstract or modern art as a higher form is ridiculous, right? Because it's totally different what it's doing, what it's going after. And within the main art world, I know it's brought up a lot, but I think it's just the best analogy is that in art, there's just a lot of emperor's new clothes. There's a lot of things that are said to be good because, well, people feel like they're supposed to think it's good. And I feel like that's one of the dominant influences in modern art is people basically thinking something's good because they want to be seen as sophisticated.
And isn't that a mind F? I won't use the word. Isn't it really meant to disorient people? Doesn't it just further the inversion theory that up is down, left is right, sickness is health?
Well, I think it absolutely does that. But it also gets in the way of people using art to communicate, right? Because you can use art to express all kinds of ideas, all kinds of emotions. But if you can't speak a universal language using imagery, right? Because if you use actual imagery, anyone can look at it and understand at least some degree of what it is, right? If it's from the real world. Whereas when you get into something like what you're showing here, you know, all these cardboard boxes on the floor, you can't really communicate much of anything with that, right? So if you limited yourself to that of not representing things that people could understand, you really couldn't communicate. So I feel like it's not just that it's twisted, it's also that it's hampering people from actually engaging with art. Like it's more or less disenfranchised the general population from art.
Yeah, that sounds exactly what I wanted to say, but not I didn't have those words the way you did. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. And that's sort of what Sanity for Sweden said the other day. And he's an artist and he paints realistic art, naked women, in fact, which I appreciate. But he was saying similar things. He's on our page. So he sent me this link. I thank Sanity for Sweden for all he's done for the show. Okay, let's get back to John. I like to alternate between guests just to make sure you both feel equal time since you're equal guests. Now, the reason I got John back on the show is because John was on another show. And I know that because John sent me an email. I'm on John's email list, as you should be. John, how do they get on your email list, by the way, if they wanted to?
BlazingPinecone.com/subscribe.
Okay, BlazingPinecone.com. I should start a series. If you want, John, if you're able, just type that link in a private chat. Sure. Can you see that there? I know you have vision issues. If it's too much.
No, I got it.
Okay. Just punch it in there. Any links you have, you can click, both of you guys can shove it in there, and I'm going to just paste it into my show notes for today. FAK 593, John Manley and Jordan Henderson. So while you're doing that, I'm going to play a clip because John was on another show called The Yakking Show, because you know there's a million podcasts now. And John sent me an email and I listened to it. I don't always click on everyone's email links, but this one I did just for fun. And turned out to be an interesting guy that I'm going to bring on the show on September 1st, actually.
Mm.
His name is Peter Wright. And the main reason I'm bringing him on the show is I've always wanted to talk to somebody from South Africa that's been basically had to leave his own country, because that was one thing that drove me nuts back in the 90s, is the destruction of South Africa by the world's elite on purpose.
Mm.
But you, I clipped every now and then I'll clip something that I find very well said, and I put it on fakotube.com, which is my video platform. And that way people either can get interested in a podcast or just listen to what I find good and not have to listen to the whole thing. So let me play what you said here. fakotube.com.
To be optimistic for the future, do you think they're going to win out in this agenda that they have? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think they will, in the sense that they'll get what they want. But I think it's going to be, they're going to leave a big mess. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, I think what already was happening was society was collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in some ways what they're trying to do is more of a controlled demolition that will benefit them. There's that side. And there's a flip side also that I think they got very scared too, because for the first time in history, the common man has access to as much media and communication means as the average person. Like for me, I mean, I didn't get this published by a professional. This actually looks better if you actually see a hard copy, better than a lot of professionally published books. And I have self-published this myself, and anyone can buy it anywhere in the world from any bookstore. So that's just one example. And then, of course, mm-hmm. like what you're doing right here with the podcast, which is much more accessible than any radio show had ever been. Mm-hmm. You know, radio shows, you had to be there at a certain time and then all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think in a lot of ways, they were very scared. They were losing control at the same time. They had already had bankrupt most countries, and then people were waking up and able to share information. So my general feeling is there's already been a lot of suffering and death. I mean, probably more suffering and death in the last 2 years than in developed first world countries, and what's happening in third world countries is even more horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see a lot more of that. And but at the same time, what we're seeing is this coalescence of people of like mind finally being, or people who are, I think, had the self-confidence and the self-respect and the humanity to not put up with this. And they're uniting in a way that never would have happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, my prediction is, yeah, it's going to get a lot more messy. I think it's going to be a lot nicer on the other end. I don't know if every country will be, and maybe some people will be collecting in certain places. I'm not sure, or at least collecting in certain countries. I wouldn't be surprised if Alberta, for example, breaks off from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, I might be moving there.
Mm.
Yeah. So that is on FakoTube, 2,100 views, which is pretty good. We're getting lots of views on FakoTube now that I'm paying more to mirror it all over the world. Well, that's pretty cool. And I thought that was a great comment, John. And by the way, John doesn't normally speak that fast. If you look at the top of the screen, it says 1.2. I listen to all my podcasts at 1.2, unless it's someone who speaks fast already. And there are a couple people that doesn't work for. So yeah, John, you were just speaking normally and I sped it up. So yeah, I thought that was a very observant comment, and of course it's what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm. No, I can't help but think that this is one of the reasons they decided to attack with the mm-hmm. COVID gone, which wasn't, I don't think, I suspect they probably would have, if they had more time, they would have came up with something better. Though it may have worked in their favor because the fact that it has so much, it's such a thin story and there's not much evidence for it that I think it required people's frontal lobe to shut down to a sufficient amount for them to accept it. And then they had people in a state where they weren't really using their cognitive function very well. So in some ways, it may have been more to their benefit than if they had done something that was more convincing.
No, I think they had to do it. I think they had to do it right now because we are in an infodemic.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that if they don't clamp down now, then they could lose control. I still think they're going to lose. And that's why I like the clip because it was optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're going to lose.
Yeah. I mean, it's already been very messy for our side, but, and well, I don't know. It's kind of, I think what we have is a lot of us, what we might have called in a typical war, like the civilians in the middle. We got us who are the soldiers on the good side. You got them, the soldiers on the bad side. And then you got everybody in between who are getting caught in the crossfire.
Yeah.
You know, what typically might be called the sheeple, but you know, a lot of sheep, you know,
yeah, Jordan collateral said this damage. Before,
a lot of sheeple are very nice people.
Yeah, nice sheeple. Jordan, what do you think of all this? Did you know right away what was going on, or how long have you been involved in truth, if at all, or is this all new to you? Tell us a little bit about your background when it comes to truth and.
Sure. Yeah. I began questioning things as a child, and
good.
One of the main reasons for doing that was just like reading, for example, history books, right? And there was strong pressure to, if you're in the U.S., to regard the U.S. as like the best country that's ever existed and all that, right?
Yeah.
And I remember as a child being like, well, now wait a second. That's what people say in every single country. You know, like you can read any of this history and they all thought their country was the best. So I remember getting in arguments with adults even then being like, well, hey, wait a second. Why should I assume that this is the best, essentially? And then started questioning some things there. And then especially like as far as the U.S., learning about U.S. foreign policy, what the U.S. has done in Latin America, especially such as overthrowing regimes that get in the way of large businesses, right? You know, the government basically just working for an oligarchy. So, for example, Guatemala, they got in the way of an oligarchy over fruit. I mean, something like literally bananas, right?
Yeah.
And they got bananas in the way, so the U.S. goes in and overthrows them. So I was already very skeptical, and I'd begun just reading books just to expand my mind on a lot of things, like something like vaccines. I assumed they were amazing because, you know, everyone assumes they are. That's what we're told. So I remember just picking up a book with a different perspective and thought, okay, I'll just see what they have to say, just open my mind to it. And then on each of these things, when I opened my mind to it, and usually I'd read multiple books, both for and against, and almost always the conventional view was wrong. Like almost inevitably, the conventional view is at least misguided to a huge degree. So when something like COVID came along, again, it's something that at first I just ignored because it just seemed like another boring fake pandemic. And then I started paying more attention when it became clear this was actually going to be used for a lot of social change. But at no point did it seem convincing to me. It always looked like a propaganda drive.
Wow, you knew it was a fake pandemic right on the onset because of your early questioning of things?
Well, some of the things that they did during the pandemic are basically just the exact same things they used in other instances, right? Like it's very similar in some respects to something like AIDS, right? So with something like AIDS where they go HIV causes AIDS, right? They'll say, okay, if you test positive for HIV, right? And then anything bad happens to you, they'll blame it on the HIV. So you could get tuberculosis, but someone without HIV could get tuberculosis too, right? And people can end up testing positive for HIV, take no medications, and 3 decades later, they're still alive and they're writing about it. So if you really dig into it, it starts looking ridiculous. And with COVID, they did the exact same thing. You know, people would test positive for COVID, and then almost no matter what happened, they would say, oh, COVID caused it. And then also, I thought it was just laughable that the symptoms of COVID, if you actually go to the CDC website itself, look at the symptoms are all the most common symptoms of all the most common diseases. And I thought that was just kind of like a joke. I mean, laughable, seeing that even early on. So it always, I don't know, there's some things you just can't unsee. So once you're aware of how a disease can be invented out of nothing, it's hard not to see that playbook being used again and again.
Yeah, AIDS was the template. That's why I call it COVAIDS or AIDS 2.0 right now. I think, yes, well, so you are...
I think that's fitting.
You're completely awake. Okay, well, we don't have to explain anything to you then, right, John?
Well, I mean, I think too, you know, the fact it was a disease that only hurts sick and old people, mm-hmm. you know, that to me was automatic red flag. So I was on the same page as Jordan. It looked fake right from the beginning. And of course, too, if you could, since don't even subscribe to contagion theory in the first place, like I've always leaned towards terrain theory. Mm-hmm. You know, anything that's going to be positioned as a contagious pandemic is a lie right from the start.
You knew about the terrain theory before this? Because I'm pretty sure I did not.
Yes. No, personally, just from my own personal experience with diseases, I had long ago started to question whether there was anything contagious in them. But no, I was very familiar with terrain theory from different sources I had studied, mainly German.
German New Medicine? Yeah.
New Medicine would have been one of them. Also Steiner's work. And
right, because you have, your family has health issues, so you probably are constantly looking for solutions.
Yes, that was a lot of the big motivator, and partly what made me question it too was, like, specifically my wife, who has been very ill with terminal condition. Basically, she's been on kidney dialysis for 12 years, and yet she never gets a cold. So that made me really scratch my head. She's always in the hospital 9 hours, 3 times a week for 3 hours, and she just never gets the flu or cold. And it just didn't make sense to me that if something was so contagious, why would she not have got it when the nurses and other staff always were? So those types of examples. And also in my family, we never all get sick at the same time. If one of us will get sick, and then it's like the other two will be fine. And well, it's mainly me and my son who ever get sick. And I know too, like when we took Jonah off, we all switched diets to try different diets at different points. And I know when we switched to one particular diet, Jonah just didn't get sick for 2 years. It was just like, he just didn't have a cold or flu for 2 years. And it was like, oh, that's interesting. So I personally come to the conclusion that most diseases are just a result of toxicity building up in the body.
Yeah. What do you say, Jordan? I see you're looking at some diseases on your computer screen there.
It was just one disease that's always really intrigued me is pellagra, which is a disease caused by a niacin deficiency. And it really came about in, what would it be? When corn spread out of the New World, right? So a lot of people started eating corn.
Okay.
And in traditional American societies, they always process the corn with lime, like limestone or ash, and that makes the niacin in the corn available to the body to use. But these societies in Europe and America started using it, and they weren't using the traditional process, so they ended up with these nutritional deficiencies. And what would happen is one person in the family would get the nutritional deficiency first, and then all of a sudden everyone else would come down with it. You know, they'd get these sores and symptoms and so forth, and then it would spread to the whole village. So it looked just like a pandemic.
Right.
For a long time, the authorities were convinced it was a pandemic, but ultimately it came down to not processing corn the right way. You know, something as totally bizarre as that, but it looked just like a pandemic.
Yeah. So it looked transmissible, but it was really everyone was deficient at and around the same time.
Yes.
So they can be explained both ways to most people, but since contagion is most likely a myth, I'm quite convinced of that now. I don't really need to hear too many more explanations than we have to figure out what else could be causing these expressions of illness. I don't even like to say catching a cold, because that implies that it's spreading and popping around between people. So we got to change the language that we're using.
It seems very evident that colds and flus always arise at the beginning of the cold season and then at the end of the cold season. By cold season, I mean the winter time.
Well, even September.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, what happens in September to most North Americans? Well,
they become more sedentary. Is that what?
Well, no. There's less sunlight. Mm-hmm. There's less activity. They are moving from outdoors to indoors. They are going into their stressful lives, whether it be work or school. There's so many things that can account for illness,
mm-hmm.
none of which are contagion, but it appears to be contagion. Go ahead, Jordan.
Oh, I believe it was John.
Oh, go ahead, John.
Speaking. Oh, it was just, I think too that the body has this natural rhythm there where it prefers to kind of go into a detox mode with particularly the switch from, especially in northern climates where you go from below and above zero. So the body, I think, to be practical, will kind of allow toxins to build up, store it away, and then it realizes, okay, I've reached a maximum, which tends to happen about every 6 months for people. And it decides, okay, now it's time to empty the trash cans and take a break instead of constantly detoxing all the time. So, I mean, that's in one explanation for it too, but there's probably several explanations that depend on the situation. Like sexually transmitted diseases have a lot of interesting explanations for what's causing those, which aren't seasonal or environmental. So.
Yeah, that's sort of a taboo subject, but even latex condoms are a problem because they're toxic. So you're rubbing toxins in some of the more exposed areas of a female body anyway, and it's that's an explanation you never hear about.
Loaded with mercury.
Is that what's in latex? I don't even know. Isn't it an oil-based product? Or?
Oh, it is, but they usually, the lubricants they use with those contain mercury.
Oh, you're kidding.
Because they're spermicides.
Right, that's true. Yeah, some of the spermicides, right. So it's antibiotic, which is against life. So yeah, that makes sense. So, wow, you're rubbing mercury in the worst places you could possibly do it. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that nuts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not too good for if conception does happen, then you start to wonder, well, kind of not the best thing for the child either. So,
right, yeah. If that's the basis for the zygote that's created at that moment in time, imagine, wow, it's incorporated immediately into the life of a human being. That's something I never thought about. Wow. I'm just looking at the FacoTube chat, just so everybody knows. We use FacoTube, which is my own platform. And the chat gets converted into comments under the video. So for anyone making a comment or putting a link in, it does show up in the final product. And that's another great feature. That, of course, is not available in YouTube. We're not on YouTube now because I just don't feel like setting up a fifth account right now. So if anyone wants to really participate, the chat is cracking in FacoTube. We've got Jacob, Alex, and Rez, and Dars. Dars is in there. So really, it's actually a bit of a blessing that YouTube keeps striking my channels, because it was lazy of some of you guys to sit in YouTube. I know you love YouTube, but try and get in the FacoTube chat if you can, guys, because I just can't keep being reborn in YouTube. It's too much. I think my channels come off strike in the next month or two, but I'm not really too worried. So FacoTube is where it's at. FacoTube is fast, and that's where the action is. So
I did let my list of 2,000 know that you had a call-in show before. I don't know if it's still a call-in show.
Yeah, it's a call-in show. And let me open up the phone lines. That's a good idea. I don't think I've done that there. So let me make sure they are open and ready to go. And yeah, people can call in. Did you have anyone you told to call in?
I just put it in the email that I sent out, the 2,000. So
yeah, that's good. That's a good number. More than mine. That's
you might get one person to call out of 2,000.
That's more than I have on my email list. Only got a couple hundred.
Well, they knew Jordan was here, and he has much better hair than me. So I thought,
Yeah.
Probably get the women to call in.
So. Right. On an audio show, that's important.
Yeah.
I don't know if Dish Devil counts as betting.
I'm not even looking right now. I'm trying to get my phones going here. Let me make sure it goes turned on. So, all right, I will put the numbers up on the screen. Yeah, we do take calls. The number in Canada where we are is 902-400-1984. And the number in the United States is 810-666-1984. Do you like those numbers, Jordan? 1984?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Totally deliberate.
Very appropriate.
Thank you.
Jordan has those numbers in one of his paintings. Very cleverly hidden.
Oh, wow. Let's see it. Yeah, can you throw it up on your screen, idea. Jordan? Let's take a peek. I've been scrolling your art as we've been talking, as I think you might have noticed. And yeah, this is a big artwork.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty cool.
I just put them up here on one of the restaurants kind of in this hellish place where all the sheep are heading to.
Tell us about this. Tell us. Explain all the elements of this painting. It's very sophisticated.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll get to the 1984 first. Just up there, you can see Italian cuisine, Fauci's feast, fear-fed mutton since 1984. And 1984 is actually when Fauci began working for the NIH, which I think is just hilarious.
Oh, my goodness. That's a good one.
That's when he joined. So, yeah, on this particular work, this was one of the earlier ones I started in around 2020. And one of the main things that intrigued me was, again, it was pretty obvious how fake so much was, right? You know, just how strong the propaganda was. And again, you know, the symptoms being exactly the same as all the most common symptoms was just kind of funny. But people were so angry about something like the masks, right?
Yeah.
So that's basically what inspired it, was just this crowd of angry sheep mad at, you know, the one goat that's telling them to go do something sensible. And then on top of that, I just began packing more and more symbolism. You know, the shepherds are wolves, as you can see, and they have, you know, a carrot and a stick because that's how politicians lead.
That's great. How long did it take you to make this?
It took about 3 months. It really shouldn't have taken that long. I'm just not a very fast painter, and I'm kind of distracted. So it would have been faster if I'd been a little more focused, but.
And your paint, would you describe your paintings as realism? Because they are very, very realistic, which I love.
Yeah, that's a difficult word, realism, because it can refer to like realistic, like you say, or it can also refer to a social genre. There was actually two paintings I wanted to show you there that were kind of interesting. Here, I'll just on this topic of like representational versus non-representational, I'm just going to show you two. All right, here's one.
And I'm going to tell my daughter to watch my show because she loves art. And boy, I think she might like your art. She really is she's not an artist, but I think she loves the study of art. Well, you are an artist. I'm sorry. She's an artist too.
Okay.
Well, I haven't seen any art lately. Come on, man. I need to see constant flows of art. I'm talking to my daughter. She is an artist and she's going to be studying art. So she should look at your website and she should look right now. She's got a chance at your art. Fakotube.com. You can take a peek at the live show. Take a look at Jordan's art. It's fantastic. So carry on, Jordan. Tell us more about what's in the, you've got the sky, hellfire in the sky.
Oh, yeah. So the main idea was just making it incredibly obvious where all these sheep are being led. And that the only person they're angry at is someone telling them to go elsewhere. And then there's just lots of fun in here. You know, in the background, all the sheep being, you know, heading right into the slaughterhouse. The symbol here was this is the presidential seal, right?
Yeah.
So I put vaccines in it. Its
claws, beautiful.
And then on each, up above it, to each corner, there's a cuckoo clock, right? And one Yeah, and one points to the 4 and the 5 and the other to the 4 and the 6 or between the 4 and the 6 and the 7 because I wasn't sure how long Biden was going to last. It was kind of like 45th president to the 46th.
Oh, nice.
And associating them both with the seal. And then the seal, I took out the eagle and I put a cuckoo bird hen instead, because cuckoo birds, you know, as you know, they lay eggs in other birds' nests.
Oh God, yeah. Hatch. How cool is that idea? I sort of knew that. Isn't that neat?
Yeah, and then the chicks kick the other eggs out of the nest, and then the parents don't figure it out usually. So you'll have this instance where you have this huge cuckoo bird, like bigger than the songbirds that it's parasitizing, a chick, just demanding food, and the parents just can't stuff it enough food. So I felt like that was a great bird on a presidential seal, was a cuckoo bird, because the politicians
that's so cool.
Are kind of that way. They take up all our energy, and you know they're definitely not what we think they are.
You are a thinking artist. Do all artists think as well as you? Do you figure, or does it help or hinder?
Well, I'd say the good ones do, definitely.
Yeah.
Actually, that was something I was going to show here, right? Can you see this on your screen right now, this black and white? Okay, so that's Guernica. That's by Picasso. Picasso is, of course, like a sacred cow in the art world. You can't criticize
him. That's Picasso. I would have never guessed.
This painting is supposed to be a criticism against war, right?
Okay.
Personally, I look at it and it seems to me like, I don't know, kind of a childish mural.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at this, this is Vasily Vereshchagin, which mm-hmm. was a Russian artist. And this painting is called The Apotheosis of War, this pyramid of skulls for anyone who is listening to this on audio alone. But it's well worth looking up, The Apotheosis of War. And it just... was fascinating to me that these two works are both dealing with the same subject, right? They're both a criticism of war, but the emotional impact of Vereshchagin working in representational means, which would now be considered kind of like outdated or outmoded, is so much more powerful than what Picasso did, even though Picasso gets all the fame. So sorry, that was just a side tangent.
No, that is interesting. I had no idea. That's really interesting.
So, Jordan, would you say like that Picasso there, that even looks representational compared to most modern art.
Yeah, it's representational.
That's the irony, isn't it?
To a degree, it's mostly using symbols, right? Mm-hmm. Like you know how children draw a Christmas tree, right? And it's always the same way, or how they'll draw like a sun. And it really doesn't reflect the actual thing very much. It's mostly just a symbolic representation.
Mm-hmm.
So this is definitely somewhat representational, and Picasso is more representational than a lot within the modern art world. But it is a little more so, but not very nice representation, right? Like it's not, I don't know, you can't really get a feeling for it. Like even when you look at something like Vereshchagin's piece, the beauty of the representation itself gives you some empathy for what you're looking at, right? Like the skulls and just the human form, it gives you empathy for it. Whereas Picasso, it's just so poorly done, you don't really get into it.
No, that looks to me like, you know, from a writer's point of view, like a so-called poem where it's just a bunch of random images strung together. And
yeah, exactly. And if people took the same philosophy that a lot of modernist artists did and they used it in writing, then they just kind of scribble on the page and let the viewer figure it out, or the reader.
Mm-hmm. In music, it would be a total disaster.
It would be. I think they've tried, but it ended up taking off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The pop music is definitely, you know, very, it's almost the opposite extreme where it's become
formula. It's super formula. It has to be.
But, you know, it shows too, because in music, if they just randomly just had someone just sit there and bang a keyboard, I mean, no one's going to listen to that.
Yeah, I'm not a big art person, so I wouldn't know Picasso from somebody else, but I'm just looking at some Picassos now just to see if I recognize anything on the just the straight up screen here. But anyway, yeah, that's a. How much can people purchase that? What do you call this? This Fauci? Is it a Fauciism?
Oh, the painting is called Sheep, Shepherds, and a Goat.
Mm-hmm.
And any of these, if people go to my main website, they can navigate to the COVID-19 artwork section there, if that's what they're looking at.
Yeah.
Any of the paintings can be clicked on to bring them up. If you go to more info, that goes to a description. There's the original paintings for sale if they're still available. And then on all of them, there's prints too. And I just put in, I always have a link in there and people can just click on that and then they can get it as a as a print or a postcard or whatever they want, printed on just about anything.
That's kind of a gory. Would somebody buy that? Because it's quite gory. Is that a hard sell?
Well, so far no one has on that particular.
I can't page. Imagine why. Would that be in your? Would you put that in your foyer?
I think it would depend on someone's temperament. Like, someone purchased this painting and they were quite happy with it.
What are we looking at there? A gag?
So
handcuff.
It's
yeah. You better describe it for the audio listeners.
Oh yeah. So
even for the visual listeners,
it's a skull that's being held up by a pair of handcuffed hands and mm-hmm. it's gagged with a face mask.
Right.
It's a representation of lockdowns, right?
Oh, that's good.
And COVID policies. And it's satirical, really, right? Mm. Like kind of a criticism there. So that's a fairly dark piece. And
yeah.
Someone purchased that and they were happy with it, though they had to get another painting of mine of geese to make their wife happy with the purchase, which is kind of funny.
She got the geese.
So they got the geese as well as this one of the screaming skull.
Wow.
So these darker, bloodier ones, again, a lot of people probably wouldn't go for it. I always think, though, that I really like this kind of artwork. Like, I would totally put that up, you know, in a living room or a foyer or whatever. And I figure I'm not the only person that's strange. So hopefully.
What would that go for as an original? Just roughly.
The original on this one I have at $4,800 is what the price is.
Wow. That's really good. If I was in the blood and guts, I can see that. What are we looking at there exactly now that we're talking about it?
Oh, yeah, sure. So this one is titled The Victory of Science.
Okay.
And the whole piece is based on basically religious iconography, right? That's what I was looking at to get the basic idea. So like this banner floating in the air of Victory of Science, and then science I have as a goddess, right? So Veritas is a goddess of truth traditionally, right? And that's mm-hmm. who she's just slain and is holding the head of. And then I put science in as a goddess as well. So the whole thing's designed almost like it's both a mockery and like an altarpiece, right? As if I'm creating this altarpiece to science, celebrating this great victory over truth. But of course, it's a mockery as well. And then same thing with a related one, which was Triumph of Science, basically the same theme, but science killing liberty.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, that's good. That's a little more uplifting. It's got some good colors. There's no blood all over the place. That's a little more palatable.
Not quite as bloody.
Well, there's a little blood. It's just sunk into the grass.
Yeah. Well, the head is not as gruesome. But yeah, it's good. I like that.
Well, a lot of these too. Like, I have stacks of Jordan's paintings in greeting card format. So I've often actually used. I used to use them more so when I was protesting against politicians and stuff, and CEOs and mayors and so forth. You send them a greeting card with this on the front; it gets their attention.
Well, if you sent the one with the blood, I think you'd be arrested.
Well, I haven't been arrested yet. I've been trying which way.
Yeah, here's a card for you. How you doing? my name's John.
Make sure to show him the Sanity and Sun. That's still my favorite painting. That was his first painting, and I thought that had the perfect balance of everything.
Is this a COVID painting?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. If you can see it now, a woman and child walking towards the viewer.
Right.
And then surrounding them are all, and they're the woman and child walking towards the viewer unmasked.
Right.
They're the only ones in full color. Surrounding them are people with masks and they're all grayed out.
Right.
Basically.
That's
and
good.
That was the main element of kind of bringing forth this idea that people who resist and stand up for what's free are essentially more colorful. They're more alive rather than grayed out and dead. On this painting, I have people in there in like a gas mask, and I have someone else in like a full respirator and face shield. And at the time, this was really early on in the pandemic when I painted it. That was hyperbole, right? It was like intended as a joke. But I wasn't even able to finish this painting before I saw people on the streets, you know, in small town America, in respirators, like not most people. Most people were just wearing the mask, but no joke, yeah. In respirators. And it was just funny that I thought it was over the top in the painting, and I couldn't even finish the painting before people were doing it in real life.
Yeah, it's terrible. Who is the Secretary of Defense of the United States? Lloyd somebody. What's his last name? Lloyd something. Have you seen that picture of him where he is inspecting the troops and he's wearing a mask and a shield? He looks like an alien. Lloyd Austin, Lloyd reviewing troops. I'm going to try and bring that up. Have you seen that picture? It could be a painting. It is.
I haven't
seen. Oh, here it is. I'm putting it up on my screen now. So I'm going to, I found it instantly. I think it's Lloyd Austin. Take a look at this. This is so bizarre. This is this.
Oh, that is.
This, hold on, where'd it go? Come back. I just find it bizarre. Let me blow it up. Isn't that crazy? It's beautiful colors and look at them. It's crazy.
Yeah. That looks like a science fiction.
A pitiful military image. Yeah, you'd almost think it's fake. And I'm a fakeologist. I think it's real. It's crazy, though.
And it's just crazy seeing all these people in their uniforms.
Oh, they're all wearing shields, too. And shields. Isn't that nuts? I don't know what country that is. I don't know where these guys are. I don't know these flags. I don't know where the hell they are. Could be European. EU.
Yeah, especially that blue flag with the stars on it.
Yeah, that's the EU.
EU flag.
So this could be the UN military force that they are so itchy to create. And this just blew me away. I thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
It's insane. And he's probably wearing some Sovereign Military Order of Malta, necklace with the symbol here. I can't blow it up close enough, but it's probably something to do with the Jesuit order or something. Military Order of Malta. Well, there you go. That was a crazy picture. I might use that as tonight's artwork. Actually, I should use your artwork for tonight's artwork, show art. I change the show art usually every show. So on your podcast player. So if you have a favorite, we'll incorporate it in tonight's show, I guess. That would be smart.
Oh, let me think. What would be a favorite?
Well, it has to be, we squeeze it down into an icon almost. So it can't be too.
I would think this safe and sanitized one would be the one that would be.
Oh, yeah, that'd be beautiful.
The detail.
Yeah. I'll grab that when we finish up and when I publish this. Yeah, that's a beauty.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why that one translated so well on the t-shirts. I know several people with that on their t-shirt, and it's because it's you know, a close-up that it kind of works from a distance.
Yeah, that's good. It's so depressing.
The inspiration for the title on this, Safe and Sanitized, came from these local Facebook groups that popped up, where they would report businesses for, you know, not going along with all the regulations that they were supposed to.
Yeah, and snitch groups. Snitch lines.
Yeah, snitch groups.
Yeah, there's so. That's a common theme. I still think those kind of things are going on all over the place. Maybe not here in Kanuckistan, but I keep hearing about stuff. Call in, turn in your neighbor, etc.
I know with our local group here, we had a website up that I was using to just list businesses that would allow people in without face masks. I wasn't able to put many businesses on there, because every time I put a business on there, that business would get contacted by four or five people complaining that they were now listed on this site, claiming that they would allow people in their store without face masks, and I'd get a call from them asking me to remove their listing.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, business is business. To me, a business should never pick a side. You cannot discriminate against anyone if you want to make a living. You just cannot. You need everybody to spend their money. So it's a really tough situation to be in. Mm-hmm. It's actually a terrible situation to be in. Awful. I can see both ways.
Well, we had one store here, Fennings Organic. They stood by that they would not force anyone to wear a face mask. The staff were not required to wear a face mask. And when once they did that, none of the staff wore face masks.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they lost a big chunk of their customers, but they gained so many.
Mm.
Like people driving all the way from Mississauga, which is like about an hour and a half to 2 hours away from their store just to get their groceries.
Yeah, yeah. I think in the end, it's just going to be whatever percentage of the population is indoctrinated. And I really think it's above 50%. This is the problem. It is the problem. Shout out to some of the chatters in the FakoTube chat. Dars just found FakoTube yesterday. He listened to a show where I talked to Jim O'Kelly, the 81-year-old who's been anti-vax for his whole life, it seems. So thank you, Dars, for joining. Alex, you're busy in the chat tonight. Skate Destroy says, really cool art. I would buy the one with the ripped off head. Well, go place an order. Skate Destroy operators are standing by. You don't need to buy the original unless you have $4,000, but I'm sure Jordan will sell you some kind of print or postcard.
I think you can even get the jigsaw puzzle, can't you?
I think so. It's print on demand. So it's like,
well, you sell the, I might buy, so I can buy a puzzle?
Yeah. All of this is print on demand, which is where it's a third party company that does the printing, right? So tons of different artists go through them. So it all tends to be, you know, a little pricier than what one would be used to paying in a store just because
it's custom.
Printing one at a time.
It's custom, for God's sake. You got to pay for art, man, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm an artist too. Yeah. I'm an audio artist.
And it's hard making a living in any form of art, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't make a living doing this. This is my fun time. But if people want to help pay for FakoTube, they're welcome to. But no, I don't make any money. This is a labor of love. And I'm actually enjoying tonight's show because it's something a little off the beaten path for what I usually do. So I'm really having a good time here. How much would a puzzle of the goat and sheep being led to slaughter cost? I might buy that for my daughter for Christmas. He loves puzzles.
Like 40. Let me.
Oh, 40's fine. How many pieces could you bust that into? Because we like.
I think it's 500.
500? Is that a good size? 500 piece puzzle? Or is that too easy?
That's a standard size for a puzzle.
She usually does 1,000. Can you break that up?
You could chop it up yourself, but there's no way for me to offer that. No.
No, can they cut a few extra pieces at the puzzle at the print-on-demand store?
I don't think so. I think they just go through one puzzle manufacturer with
all right, that's
one
fine.
Size.
Or you could buy two and then just mix them all up together and make it more challenging.
Yeah, that'd be a pain.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. She'd get through it. Do the edges first. Yeah, so if anyone wants to buy your art, what's the website again? JordanHendersonFineArt.com, I think.
Yes, that's it exactly.
I hope you get some sales out of tonight's show. That would be cool. Come on, Fakeologist, step up. I'm going to send this show to Sanity for Sweden, who has 50,000 YouTube viewers, and he might be interested in seeing a fellow artist. I know all artists like to sniff each other's work. And I think he'd like your realism. This is realism. This is good. Really good stuff. This is what I appreciate.
That was actually going to be, that was his first submission for the novel cover. The safe and sanitized with the skull on the face mask.
Right. And why?
It was just too horrific for the novel.
Where is your novel cover? Can you put that up, Jordan?
It's right here. This was Manly's brainchild, actually. I really liked the idea.
So this is commissioned work.
Brought it up. It is.
I'm not sure. Now, I'm a bit of a photographer. I'm having a little bit of trouble with just the positioning because...
We took some artistic license.
In photography, I was always told you don't center stuff, that kind of thing.
Oh, Well, that's a rule in art, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a rule that I personally enjoy breaking if I can.
All right, you're a rebel. Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, one of the first times I did that was this painting of these chickens, which I designed also almost kind of like an altarpiece. And I knew I wasn't supposed to do that, so I wanted to do that. So I just went ahead and centered it right.
But it's quite, it's very symmetrical, though. I think it's okay because it's sort of symmetrical. I think it's okay.
Actually, I bought those chickens as a greeting card. I use them quite a lot when I don't want to send people to behead it.
So. Mm-hmm. So, John, you didn't describe what this represents, so go for it.
Well, there's a few things. Even just the shape of the arms there with the V formation is a symbol that gets used in the story a lot. The main character's name is Vincent, which is derives from the Latin word for victory.
Mm.
So there's that subtleness there. But the main, we were trying to find something that summed up the theme of the book, which was opposite. How, I'd say if I summed it up shortly, the book was about how people were going to be doing very minor infractions again. You know, these new normal laws don't make any sense. They've made normal human behavior illegal, and the reaction for trespassing against these new laws was going to be so disproportionate to even if there was any validity to it, which there wasn't. So we have here two hands holding at a in a lockdown street with a police officer in front with a face mask. So the two hands holding obviously shows that they're not practicing social distancing and that they're outside during lockdown. And that for some reason, being outside during lockdown and holding someone's hand is now worthy of having a police officer with tasers and guns and so forth approaching you. And one would assume trying to arrest you.
What's the green and the red? Any significance there?
The green in particular, that's Stephanie's dress, which you find right in the first chapter. She gets nicknamed the dandelion because she has blonde hair and wears a green dress. So the dandelion becomes a symbol throughout the story of how dandelions aren't afraid to stand up in the open air, even when they see a lawnmower coming.
That's true.
And dandelions can break right through concrete. Contrast to him who actually wore a green face mask at the beginning of the story and was symbolized as being a turtle that just likes to hide in a shell and wait for everything, the bad stuff to go away. It is kind of funny too. I've told this story a few times, but when Jordan originally painted that, he didn't have these sleeves. So it looked like bare arms. And my immediate impression when I saw the painting was that they were being arrested for public nudity. So I asked him to put some sleeves on the arms.
Gotcha. And that's an OPP officer, Ontario Provincial Police, which is probably what patrols your town.
Yes, he's the main villain of the story, which I have Jordan to thank a lot for that one too, because when I originally wrote when he saw, I think, what was the 8th or 13th draft of the novel, he got to the part of the police officer and he just quite frankly told me, that's just your typical like badass Hollywood cop. He's two-dimensional, he's predictable, he's boring. And I don't know if you put it quite in those words. So
I don't think I was that harsh, but more or less, yes.
Yeah, I was reading your mind. Yeah. So I scrapped him and I rewrote the character completely. And I am so grateful I did because I've had, for instance, I was on Will Dove's show and Will had actually said after reading the novel, he said, this was the first time I was actually sympathetic towards the other side because he actually could understand why the police officer was acting the way he was. So, and Jordan did a good job with the OPP. The only thing he had on the original painting, it was all blue instead of black. So I had to have him repaint that. But otherwise he...
Boy, you're a demanding customer. That is, you can't just repaint something like that, can you, Jordan? Easily? Or does it take...
Well, I had gone for a really dark blue because my bias of the police being blue came through enough that when I was looking at photos of the OPP, I thought it was dark blue. And then afterwards, when John informed me that it was black, I was like, oh, okay. And it didn't take much to take the blue shade out.
That's good.
The town also looked more Mexican at the beginning, so we had to make a lot of adjustments. And the actual buildings there are from Stratford, Ontario, where I live, so some of the ornaments.
Where's the Canadian Tire or Tim Hortons in the background? I mean, come on.
There's no Tim Hortons in Moosehead. So.
Oh, okay.
It's a two-light street. I mean, it probably would be. I mean, I lived in St. Mary's, and I modeled Moosehead, the town, very much after St. Mary's, which is a town just near London, Ontario.
Yeah, and I know. I got relatives there.
They had a Tim Hortons move into the town. It's a stone. Everything's made with stone there. So they insisted that when Tim Hortons moved in, they had to use the same stonework as the rest of the town. But even with that, the town ended up calling it St. Timothy's. And
St. Mary's for realsies did that, or in your
They didn't change the name of the town to St. This town was still St. Mary's, but Tim Hortons was called St. Timothy's.
Oh, okay.
They put it right beside the library. The library had this beautiful outdoor garden where you could go and read in the summertime. And then the drive-through for Tim Hortons was on the other side of the fence from the
right. So you get all library. The exhaust.
The exhaust, and you're trying to sit there enjoying a book, and it's, oh, can I take your order? And people processing the order back and forth, yelling over the intercom, and
right.
They just ruined the garden.
Yeah, that's funny. That's sad.
So that's what St. Timothy did to St. Mary's Library.
And destroyed it, yeah.
Interesting. So there was no Tim Hortons in Moosehead. I took it's my book. I could do what I want.
That's true. Well, if it's going to be a utopia, it can't have a drive-thru. Sort of. Sort of venti. And, Jordan, have you done any pictures or have you drawn any inspiration from the Freedom Convoy in Ottawa, especially when there was that conflict between the unidentifiable officers and maybe some of the mounted units that trampled the woman and that kind of thing?
It's interesting that you bring that up because that's actually a painting that I'm working on right now.
Aha! I would have commissioned that had I not known.
I'm not sure if I'll give you any glimpse of that painting or not.
Okay.
As far as a preview yet, because it's so close to being done at this
point. Oh, neat.
But yes, as soon as that was happening, the Freedom Convoy, I thought, okay, I have to do a painting around this.
Yeah.
At first, I thought of doing it almost like a tribute, right? But that's kind of a tall task, right? To do justice to something like that. And then as I was thinking about it, and especially the Canadian Mountie running over that lady and all of that, I started looking at it from the perspective of more of kind of like satirical and a mockery of the mounted police doing that, as well as the counter protesters, right? You know, the protesters who thought they were protesting fascism by joining hands with the state, basically, to repress a protest. So that's the angle I started approaching it from, and I am working on that right now.
Wait, what would you do? Would you just take a picture and just start painting the picture? Or because unless you were there or sketching, how else would you do it?
No, usually I just start thinking about the different elements and what more or less a general direction that I'd want to go. And then from there, the ideas just start coming in. So with almost any of these, it just starts with basic ideas. So like the Triumph of Science one was just thinking of this absurdity of science being worshipped, right? So that's when I started looking at religious art and iconography and the halos. And then the idea just started to build from there. So with something like the trucker protest, again, that's where at first I was thinking of, okay, a tribute, and ideas weren't coming to me. So I switched to kind of like a mockery of the Canadian mounted police and the counter protesters. And then ideas started to come to me. And then from there I do sketches, and it evolves over time. It's a bit of a process. Usually I'll chew on an idea and think about it for a month or so before I even start doing the sketches, you know, just now and then.
Another inspirational moment, which I couldn't believe, was the Adamson barbecue in Toronto, which I believe was November 2020, maybe a year, just in the first year, where they brought out all the king's horses and all the king's men to shut down a barbecue place. That was an epic moment that is a disgrace to the city of Toronto. I found that was just, to me, that was a super low point for John Tory.
Oh, yeah.
The mayor, it's unbelievable. If it wasn't set up and fake, I wouldn't have thought it really could happen the way it did. It was crazy. Just crazy. Super low point, though. I hope we don't have to hit another low point again. Yeah, I see that you say Julie's trying to call in. I don't know. It should go through. Well, I can just try it. If she's on Skype, she can call. I got the Skype thing open. I haven't had a phone call in a while, so I don't know what's going on. I can try calling myself and see if it rings.
Yeah, it looks like
you got to press one when you call in.
Yeah.
Did she press one?
A little late for her, so.
Now I'm kind of curious. Yeah, it does work. Did you hear that ringing?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to press one, Julie, when you call in. Maybe she pressed something else. Maybe she went into the audio chat. Yeah, I know. We got a lot of thing there, but a lot of ways to get through. Well, nobody called in tonight. That's sort of the usual. We only have two guests. There's usually not a lot of room. I had an artist from Sao Paulo, Brazil, who contacted us through Sanity for Sweden. And she's a friend I just noticed on Skype. So a lot of artists can see through the BS, Jordan. Why is that?
I don't know, because the interesting thing is a lot of artists that are, let's say, coming out with a message that contradicts the mainstream have a hard time getting exposure.
Uh-huh.
So I have a hard time knowing even where they are, like trying to figure out what other artists are, say, doing something similar to what I'm doing. It's very hard to even find them at all. But I guess it would depend. Like, artists who are willing to buck the system as far as the art world itself, they're willing to go out and create beautiful things, even if the mainstream art world's telling them, you know, that representational art is dead or something, then I suppose they'd already have to be accustomed to developing a little bit of a thicker skin and seeing through things. Whereas a lot of the artists within the mainstream, I feel like, if anything, they're more susceptible to falling for all of this.
Some of my favorite artists back in the day were editorial artists. Back when I used to read newspapers. And there are even websites I used to go to probably about 15 years ago where I could look at all the editorial art all over the world. And man, they're just so creative, so smart. Did those guys, do they even exist anymore? Because, of course, newspapers, I don't read newspapers. So those guys, unless they have their own website, I don't usually go to newspaper websites either. Do you ever look at editorial artists? Do they still exist? New ones, or the old ones gone away?
I don't see them much as far as just when looking at the news or newspapers. Some political cartoonists, of course, they're still pretty active. But as far as like doing full paintings and such for editorials, I don't see a lot of that.
Mm.
I do know that especially like book covers employ a lot of artists, and then like video games and trading card games and the whole world of sci-fi and fantasy employs tons of artists. A lot of artists work within that entire realm, and a lot of the work being done is really good, but it's really kind of niche.
Yeah. Work. Is there any crypto angle for you to sell your art? This NFT thing, I don't really understand it. I'm just learning about cryptocurrency and just playing around with small, tiny amounts just to see if it works.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by cryptocurrency too, but I've always been kind of like a little bit suspicious of it. Like some of it's felt a little bit like a pyramid scheme, and I haven't wanted to get into it without really knowing what I'm doing, because I know people will say something's easy, but I've too many times gotten into something that was supposed to be easy and gotten burnt. So I haven't really jumped into it yet, but it's intriguing. I think it's maybe even really promising. It's just I'm not confident enough to rush into it.
It is fairly easy. I mean, I got into it 4 or 6 years ago, and back when Bitcoin was, I have to say, it enabled me a lot more freedom to produce a novel. It worked out well for me, but of course, right now it's gone down. And
you put your wallet out for donations through Bitcoin? Is that what you said?
Oh no! I just had bought a lot of Bitcoin.
Years ago.
Yeah, back when it was like, I don't know, 20,000, and then it went up to 60,000. I don't know. I guess it was 10,000 and went up to 60,000. You know, so I made a lot of money.
Oh, you cashed out too at the top? Way to go.
Yeah, I cashed. Well, I did. I wish I had cashed out completely at the top, because I didn't, and I lost a lot when it went back down. But I, you know, the net effect was I can't complain.
Well, good. Well, Epic Cash, who sponsors FakoTube, they're having a sale today. It's down to 67 cents. So if you're interested in Epic Cash, there you go.
What is Epic Cash?
Well, I do a show with Uncle Vigilante, who's chief promoter, it seems, of Epic Cash. It is a sophisticated privacy coin or privacy. It's hard to explain when it comes to the word privacy, but it just protects the user's transactions. It's what Bitcoin would be if Bitcoin was invented today. So Bitcoin is limited by the technology that they embraced back when it started. And as you know, as we all assume, technology makes leaps and bounds pretty much every year. So Epic Cash is fairly new. And it on comparison sites, it stands up and stacks up very well with all kinds of features that anyone who wanted to have a Bitcoin for this era would have. So it's using modern technology, and it's just getting going, and it doesn't have any major backers. So it's a good time, if you believe in it, to get in, because it's right on the ground floor. And this is not investment advice, but if you wanted to just play around, maybe put a little, put in a few bucks and just play around and have fun like I'm doing, just moving it around and trying it out, trying some apps and just playing with small amounts, then you could do that. And fake11.com/epic. And just the other day I said, I put my donation page up, and if you download the Vite app, V-I-T-E, then you could easily scan this. I can find the damn thing. Where is it here? I must have deleted it. So just go to fakeologist.com/donate. I think I just bring it up real quick here for all you guys, since we're getting near the end of the show anyway. And all those I just got a donation, by the way, from the old fashioned way from, let me bring it up. Too many windows. David, thank you so much. You obviously heard the call, and a small $5 donation. That's fantastic. And you probably just use this simple plugin page and entered a donation. But if you want to play around with some cryptocurrency, you can scan this with the Vite app, V-I-T-E, and you could send me 70 cents. And it's just fun. It's just sort of a fun way, and it's super fast to do it, and it would be it's pretty frictionless, if you ask me. You don't have to mail anything, you don't have to give your ID, nothing comes through except the amount. So it's fun. But of course there's other cryptos as well that are more well known. I'm going to take my pirate coin off, because I'm sort of transitioning away. I don't want to have a million different cryptos on here, so I'm sort of sticking to Monero, Epic, and here's a Bitcoin QR code you could scan. What about you, Jordan? Once you do get into it, you should definitely put these kind of things up on your website and accept this kind of money. And I'm not saying that people use art for exclusively money laundering, and I'm not promoting that at all, but art can be a store of value as well, can't it?
That's true. It can be. It's, of course, a gamble as far as a store of value, but a lot of people have done that. And I know there are at least allegations that especially higher up in the art world where these paintings are selling for insane quantities of money, that there's a tremendous amount of money laundering going on, which would make sense to me, but I've never done a deep enough dive to really know what the, you know, what exactly the mechanics of that are.
Well, I've heard some neat stories, like especially in Latin America, where they've had people had removed paintings, very, very expensive paintings from museums in Latin America and replaced them with a replica and then had been selling it on the black market for, you know, 10 years. So there's some pretty neat stories in that regard. But Ab, I'm going to have to sign off. It's 9 o'clock for me, which is a little late.
Okay.
It's only, 6 o'clock for Jordan. So it's not too
bad. Where's Jordan anyway? I didn't ask.
He's out on the, you can't tell from his accent?
No, not really.
Yeah. West Coast.
Does he have a West State? Oh, you're in America. Oh, wow.
Oh, you didn't realize.
Yeah. No, not really. How did you meet him?
I through Sanity and her son. I saw the painting when it went on Off Guardian, and I was immediately just blown away. I said, "This is just incredible!" So I put it on my own website, sent it out to the list to promote the work, and I was secretly hoping, well, I promote his work a little, and maybe I can approach him and see if he would be willing to consider doing the novel cover. And as soon as he I contacted him and let him know I sent this out to my subscribers, and he immediately offered to do the novel cover. So I was like, wow.
Oh, nice.
Really well. Yeah.
Oh, for some reason, I was under the impression he was Canadian. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, no, and it's kind of nice, too, to have... I think he was the only American contributor to my novel. I mean, I have like 40 people who contributed in one fashion and the other, but Jordan was the only one who was not Canadian. Well, sorry, he was American. I did have some German and other nationalities involved.
Is it just me, or does it seem like Canada punches above its weight in something like truth and the alt media? Like, I feel like Canada, Britain, that both of them have a ton of investigative journalists. They have a lot of shows, like the show you're doing right now. There just seems like a lot of people trying to get truth out there from Canada and Britain, and it seems like they're more than what you would expect for the relatively small population, especially of Canada.
I think you're right. I mean, there's nothing like Rebel News in America, for example.
Really, there isn't. And in the U.S., things push a lot more. I mean, there's some places like Activist Post. They do a pretty good job of navigating between right and left and don't really get sucked into either side. But a lot of the U.S. news outlets go heavily either right or left. They tend to really go for a camp.
Hmm. Yeah. I'd say most of the alternative media in Canada is very right wing too, but it all depends on your definition of right and left. And that's,
of course,
that gets very murky. Because to me, it's right and left, as far as I'm concerned, right is freedom, left is tyranny, but other people have other definitions. So.
I think everything's been reorganized with COVID. I really think the idea of left and right is, it doesn't apply. And the fact that they keep trying to crowbar left and right when it comes to COVID, it just doesn't work. I think this is a brand new division that we're in now. You're either with the COVIDian cult or you're not. It doesn't really matter which side you're on, because if you're pro-vaccine, pro this, the mask, I call it the mask. It shouldn't be a mask. It's the mask, because it's a religious garment. So if I really think, I really think that's way more. I just can't believe we're talking left and right, but it's so powerful in the United States that it's a really great division that they can just keep promoting. But the fact that Trump, for instance, is supposed to be on the right, yet he is the one that is just as responsible for everything, the vaccine, the emergency order. He signed all that. So he's.
Well, this is why I think they're just confusing people with terminology, because they're changing the meaning of everything. If right meant limited government, then doing things like paying for vaccines isn't a job of a government.
Right. Yeah.
So I think it gets down to this problem we have, what they're doing with everything, just not political terms, but gender and the word racism. I mean, they're changing the meaning of things. It's like that documentary that came out, What is Woman? I mean, that was hilarious if it wasn't true. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I should see it.
He's going to professors in university and asking them, you know, what is
I
a woman?
I know.
And
I got to see like, that. Is that worth like, it?
Yeah. Or if you want the condensed version, I haven't seen the documentary myself. What I did, I am a big fan of the podcast Just Right, which comes out of London, and they did a one-hour episode where they just extracted the best of the best from that documentary. And okay. also kind of tied it into an objectivism interpretation. So that's all I've heard. But from what I heard, I am tempted to watch the whole documentary because it is scary to hear a professor saying that a woman is someone who identifies as a woman. And when he asks, but what is he identifying with? He can't say that a dog is a dog. Is someone who identifies as a dog. What is a dog? And the lady who's answering the questions literally says, I can't answer that because I'm not a woman. Which even the fact she is a woman is one thing, but even if she wasn't, it doesn't make sense. Like I can't define what a dog is because I'm not a dog doesn't make any logical sense whatsoever. So I think this is what they've done at the left and right is they've confused it to the point that it had a very simple definition where it was limited government or government controlling every aspect of your life. And now they've confused it where it's like left means you like brown bread and right means you like white bread. You know,
they're customizing definitions to suit the narrative. That's for sure. And it's not.
Or just to completely confuse people.
You know? It's to keep people disoriented. They're too busy arguing about nonsense when the main thing, this tyrannical digital financial system that they want complete control over everything you spend money on and where you go and how you go. That's the main idea they don't want you talking about. If you can talk about anything else, then they've been successful. That's how I look at it.
All right. I'm going to have to call it a night for myself.
All right. Well, we'll sign you off and everyone go to your website.
They can go straight to muchadoaboutcorona.com and I'd recommend, you know, if they haven't given the novel a try, just go there and hit the preview button and you can read the prologue and chapter one. And if most people don't want to stop reading after that, if you do, then you can. And if you don't, then you have to go buy the book. So right. I encourage people to give that a try. Or if they'd like to hear it read, there's also a replay of the book launch.
Where's
and
that?
Not only is...
book launch replay.
Okay. Yeah, it's on the same page. If you go to muchadoaboutcorona.com, you'll see the replay button available at the bottom.
Right.
And as far as artwork goes, not only does Jordan do the cover, but he actually does the introductory. He's done an introductory charcoal drawings for all five parts of the book. So that's a nice little treat. And everyone seems to agree part five had the best illustration, Jordan, the beaver. So. I hear that over and over again. Everyone loved the beaver.
Well, that's Canada.
Yeah. Well, there's a beaver. There's a moose, too. That's Canadian also.
Okay, I'll put a link to that. That'll be link number five. And it's on Vaccine Choice Canada's website. Is that right? Does that make sense?
Their BitChute channel.
Yeah, on BitChute, yeah.
Yeah, I did it with Vaccine Choice Canada. They were did a very good job of promoting the book launch, and it was... nice to work with them after, you know, being in contact with them for 2 years, and they were very supportive of the book. And so that's what if people want to do that, go over to muchadoaboutcorona.com I got to pay my commission to my cover artist. So,
he gets a cut of future sales, or do you have to pay up front?
No, Jordan was very kind to me. He just did a cut of all sales, so
That's nice.
Thank him enough for that. And he also sent. I have it behind me on my camera, but he sent me even the original painting, which I was just absolutely thrilled with. I don't usually have it here on the easel, but I have it here now, and
yeah, looks good.
I'm actually be moving into more of an office space, so it's going to be a kind of a permanent fixture behind my camera. But so I was
okay.
Very grateful for the show, and I'm glad to have had this time to hang out with Jordan too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much, John. I guess we'll end the show now, but I didn't hear anything lately from Jordan. Jordan, do you have any closing remarks before we?
Jordan could talk to Midnight about his paintings, but yeah.
Yeah, I could. So it's probably best to take your cue.
Yeah, me too. We've been going an hour and a half, but I think Jordan, we could even probably have him back without John. I feel bad if that happened, but.
No, don't go ahead. I think you should. You could do a whole show just on the goat, shepherd, and sheeple painting.
Yeah. No, I really want to dig into what's going on in Washington State, which will be part of the new Cascadia mega region when they realign all the borders. So, whereabouts in Washington State, real quick, are you from?
I'm in southeast Washington. It's a little town called Dayton.
That's really small. Yeah, I don't know, because I never heard of it.
Yeah, most people.
I know Spokane is in the middle.
Yeah, so we're a couple hours away from Spokane. We're a few hours away from everywhere.
Yeah, actually. But you have a fairly tyrannical governor, and he's fairly plugged into the New World Order, is he not?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have, like, Bill Gates has his home here, and then Amazon has its headquarters in Seattle.
And Starbucks.
And, yeah, and Washington is one of these states where it's like here on the map where my mouse is. That's where I am.
Where's your mouse? I can't quite see it. Are you in the purple zone? Sorry.
If you see the map, you see the blue mountains there,
right
in the corner.
Oh, I see your mouse now. You're right in the bottom corner.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, I see blue mountains. Oh, I see that. Right. Wow. Yeah. That's not even really Washington. What's the? You got Oregon just below. And
Idaho,
right.
Yeah. So, yeah, Washington supposedly had, I think, one of the first COVID cases.
Yeah.
And then I believe our governor is still running on his emergency powers from, from like 2.5 years ago. So it's pretty ridiculous. So Washington definitely tries to follow along and be like a mini California here in the north.
Yeah, it's bad. We hear about it. Not as much anymore. We're just not really hearing other jurisdictions anymore up here in Ontario, but we're right up there with you. And I think your proximity to Canada, because they want to merge, they want to get rid of the borders. So they want to have all these mega regions, and I think Washington State is part of Cascadia. So you would be merged with the southern, southwest corner of British Columbia, Vancouver, because really people in close proximity have a lot in common. For instance, you guys have more in common with the people of southwest Florida, for instance. So it's geographically makes sense what they want to do, but it's just the way they want to do it. Through this tyranny, that's the big problem, because they know people will not go along with any of this stuff. People don't go along with any change unless there's a compelling reason. And that compelling reason they invented is this health crisis, so they can bring in the biosecurity state. So, yeah, but I didn't know you were an American the whole time. I was assuming you're Canadian, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah. Had you known, you probably would have been like, "Okay, John, let's just have you on."
No, not at all. I'm American as well. So,
really?
Yeah.
What brought you to Canada?
Well, my mother's an American, so I got citizenship through her. Because one day we thought we'd have to escape Canada a long time ago, but it still might be true. I don't know.
Yeah, but you have to go a lot further than just over the border into the U.S.
Well, yeah, that's because all the northern border states are going to be integrated with Canada. So that's why, you did. If the projections are true, then yeah, you'll have to find a flyover state to seek refuge in. Maybe I don't know, because every state, every household is divided right now. Still, You know, we're just waiting for the people that can't see through the lie to cross back over, and we'll take them back. But right now, the divisions are epic everywhere. So there's no one place anywhere in the world where you have sane people. It just doesn't exist.
No. And there's no guarantee, even if you found a place that looks substantially better, that it would remain that way for any length of time.
That's right. That's right. This is a long-term propaganda exercise. And they're not going to give up until they brainwashed everyone on the planet. I just don't know if it's going to continue to work. I'm really here for the show. And I just don't know what's going to happen. But
I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what the next chapter is, in a way.
Oh, yeah, we all are, because we're all just hostage to their plan. Because they still have the majority on their side. But I'm not sure I'm not sure that the mushy middle of people that are sort of on the fence, I'm not sure that they're going to keep going along with it much longer. I think they've already stopped. I think one of the magic numbers with the vaccine is 2. I think once people got 2, then they figure, okay, what is this continuing vaccine plan all about? Because those people were just going along to get along, but I don't think they read the playbook where it's going to be a subscription model for vaccine, and I don't think they want to. A lot of the people are going to go with it. So that's a problem for them. What do you think?
Yeah, and I would agree, because something like the flu vaccine, right, was never at super high uptake amongst those who were taking it anyways. And then now, early on during COVID, when they really started pushing the vaccine, I remember I was to some degree a little bit happy about it, because a lot of people were forced to actually start looking into it, right? Because people just accept vaccines on faith. They go, well, you know, I don't want to be seen as an anti-vaxxer. So they just assume they're these amazing things. So with COVID, the vaccine, for the first time, a lot of people were actually looking into vaccines critically when they never had before. And I thought, okay, well, if they start doing that with all the other vaccines, the backlash against this won't just be a backlash against the COVID-19 vaccine. People are going to start rethinking vaccines in general. And I don't have them pulled up now, but I've run across several studies that do indicate that is the case, that parents are starting to cool on vaccines in general, and that whole swaths of the population, now in the US it's mostly on the Republican side, but whole swaths are starting to reconsider whether any vaccine mandates are acceptable, like for schools and such. So I feel like that is a backlash that continues to grow as far as people cooling on not just the COVID-19 vaccine, but vaccines in general.
And it's great news. It's really great news, and I think that was always the gamble for them. That was a Hail Mary. I think with the infodemic, with people able to share information so easily, that they knew the vaccine story would get away from them, and I think they needed this Hail Mary to either lock down the whole population into this paradigm. This was their last chance, and hopefully they've blown it. I really hope that... like you said, vaccines will be thrown right out, period. And then we might be left with a prison planet that goes really deep, that even having a child, you'll need a license for, if they get their passport system for life in place, you see. So that's sort of the hope that doesn't happen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, this was a great chat. I'm really glad John brought you on. It was sort of just an idea that I think it was his idea, which is great. Because I really did. I knew of your work, and he showed me a few pieces. But it was really good to get some explanation and to get some more exposure for some of these pieces. Yeah, I really like... this one, ooh, 7,500. It's still available for this. Okay. This one is quite a piece. Super colorful, and yeah, it's got a lot in it. Wow. It's very troubling, actually. Yeah, a troubling idea. Okay. Troubling concept. Yeah. So if anyone wants to get a How much would just a print of this be? Is that under more info here?
Yeah, it would depend on with any of it, just what size you opt for and what you have it printed on, like whether it's canvas or paper or whatnot.
So if I wanted a puzzle out of this, what do I press on the page?
You know, I don't think I have the puzzle activated on this. I'll do that after we're done here. I'll put it up in case anyone wants it.
So would there be a link on this page somewhere?
Yeah, there'd be a link on this page because basically the third-party company does all the printing and I just have to approve what I'm good with them printing it on. And I think when I uploaded this, they didn't offer puzzles at the time.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's cool. All right. Well, maybe we'll have you back sometime. And yeah, you sound like you're really into truth. You sound like a younger guy. Did you ever look into 9/11 or that kind of truthiness area?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 9/11 is one of those that at the time it happened, I was just a little kid. And
yeah.
When 9/11 actually happened, I was too young to pay any attention to it at
sure.
all. But I grew up, of course, with the whole Iraq war going on and Afghanistan and so forth. And it was when someone just finally brought it up, just an acquaintance just questioning 9/11. It was just interesting being like, oh, I guess I really don't know anything one way or another. So I did start looking into that. And it's one like any of these others that I feel like once you get into it, it's pretty damning. I mean, something like even just the main buildings coming down the way they did is already suspicious enough. And then something like Building 7,
it
more or less closes the case for me. It's not something that I've put, a ton of research in. Like a lot of these 9/11 researchers, the work they've done is absolutely amazing. I haven't done anything at that level, though I might eventually do a symbolic painting around it. I'm not sure.
Oh, that'd be cool. That'd be great, yeah. There was so much artwork created for the 9/11 movie, I call it a 102-minute movie, that it was really dramatic, but most of it was Hollywood, I would say. And if you ever wanted to watch a movie about that, September Clues, even though it was done in 2008, many things have changed in the mind of the author. It's still, for the most part, a really good template to see 9/11 through. So
I'll have to look that up. That sounds interesting.
All of those are on FakoTube. You can get that on FakoTube if you want. Now, before we close, I'm going to take a screenshot of one of your pictures and use it as the art for tonight's broadcast. So did you recommend this head, I think?
Yeah, I think that one would translate best out of thumbnail.
All right. I'm going to do that, and I'm going to make sure I can get your name in there. I'm going to add that with that little camera sound. So thank you very much for joining in tonight, Jordan. It was a pleasure to meet you and to talk to you. And I hope people can contact you through my website and maybe purchase some of your art. It's really good stuff.
Well, thank you for having me on the show and the opportunity to talk about the art. It was a pleasure to come on.
Yeah, okay. Excellent. We'll have you back. I'm pretty sure we'll have you back. This was great.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. All the best to you. And All right. Take care. You heard the music, guys. I put it up a little poorly there. I'm not a perfect sound engineer, but yeah, thanks for listening. It was a good show tonight. Very interesting. Very interesting, actually. And thanks to John Manley, thanks to Jordan Henderson. All the links to tonight's show are going to be in the show notes. You won't have to struggle. What do we got for tomorrow? We should go to fakeologist.com/live. And who's on tomorrow? What is tomorrow, Thursday? Oh, it's the end of the week. Okay, I think we're going to have Tiago and try and hook up to his massive Facebook group called Died Suddenly. So we're going to try and maybe take calls through that if we can. All right. Well, I think I promoted the donation button enough. Thanks for everyone tuning in on FakoTube. thanks to the FacoTube chat. It was more active by far than the DLive chat. So that was pretty cool. And Alex has posted some links to FacoTube, so you can click on them. And yeah, great show. Cool show. Different show. We do different things. I've got all kinds of guests lined up that, you know, they're not fakeologists, but just talking to me through a fakeologist point of view might be interesting to them. And hey, if they anyone finds out they're talking to the fakeologist, they might actually come to the website and learn about what we all know, which, of course, is that almost everything is fake until proven real in the media. And, of course, we've got 9/11 coming up, the granddaddy of them all for us, so... All right, guys. Thanks for joining and signing off. Take care.